Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, in our previous episode of the Paracast, we had a fascinating discussion of pop culture. And we've got good reaction to that because I think a lot of people who follow into UFOs, paranormal, are also interested in sci-fi and in horror movies and things like that. Well, today we've got someone named Aaron Deese. We're introducing the Paracast listeners. And he's into what he calls the Texas Dogman Triangle. I'm going to ask him how he got in that. But before we go into his background and everything, what's the difference between a dogman and a werewolf?
That's a really good question, Gene. And that is dependent upon who you ask. You know, if you go back to some of the earliest werewolf lore that we can trace back to the European Middle Ages, these were human beings who had the ability to shapeshift after making a pact with the devil or practicing some kind of witchcraft. If we come to kind of the mid-modern century, you know, talking about pop culture, like you mentioned a moment ago, we're talking about, you know, I transform under a full moon because I got bit, but other than that, I'm probably a normal person. If we're talking about a topic of cryptozoological inquiry, which is, you know, kind of where I spend my time, we're looking at either an unclassified animal of some sort, maybe a mutant, maybe a series of one-offs, you know, something to that effect. Or, again, depending who you ask, we may be talking about some kind of a spectral, maybe interdimensional being, some kind of a ghost or a primordial guardian of Earth. I'm sure we'll get into that as we go. It varies. It depends who you ask.
In all the world, what got you interested in chasing after shape-shifting kind of things?
My interest in like cryptozoology and paranormal research started when I was really young. I got interested in the Mothman Prophecies by John Keel. Love the movie with the screenplay adapted by Richard Haddam. Actually met him recently. Very, very nice guy. I loved that movie, and it really sparked my interest in the fact that, oh, the world is really weird and strange, and we haven't figured out everything that's out there yet. And that takes you into UFOs and into Bigfoot, the Chupacabra, things like that. Then a few years ago, I kind of came back to it. We were dealing with a loss in the family, and I was needing some kind of a distraction, some kind of an escape. And that brought me to Small Town Monsters documentaries. They're the production company that's publishing the book. It kind of just became my full-time hobby. And then my wife, Sarah, and I started a podcast talking about, you know, the paranormal and cryptozoology. And one of the stories we looked at centered around three sightings of werewolf-like creatures in the central Texas area, very close to where we lived at the time. And the first story we looked at was actually relayed to us by a family member, by someone we knew who had no interest in this stuff, didn't know anything about dogmen or real werewolves prior to, you know, sitting down with me and sharing this story. And so from there, it kind of just became a regular topic of research for me. And before long, I had enough to fill a book.
How far back can we trace this kind of werewolf, shape-shifting, dogman lore?
We can honestly go as far back as most of what we know about recorded history. There are mentions of half-human, half-canine creatures in Mesopotamian folklore. You have Urudumu, the gruesome hound. You know, some people have probably heard the name Pazuzu. Some early incarnations of Pazuzu are depicted as a humanoid creature with a dog-like head. We have King Lycan of Greek mythology, who was transformed into a wolf by Zeus as, you know, punishment for committing an act of cannibalism. We have stories about upright walking wolves and shape-shifting humanoids going back as far as we could go, really. And that's not accounting for, again, the European mythology we mentioned a moment ago, Native American mythology and folklore. Really, anywhere you go on the planet where wolves are or were once native, we have mythology about upright walking wolves or shape-shifting humanoids. So it's interesting. It's interesting. It's been with us for a very, very long time.
Now, when you look at the movies about werewolves and things like True Blood, they are basically changing to wolves. They look like a wolf. In things like The Wolfman, the famous movie with Lon Chaney Jr., not the new one, which I thought was rather bad, the original one with Claude Rains, Lon Chaney Jr., and a short appearance by Bela Lugosi when his career was on the downturn. And there he's made up to look like an upright wolf. The face is terrific. They've got his feet in such a way that he walks like a wolf or a dog. They really put a lot of attention to detail. I thought that was one of the best horror movies made in the 1940s era. But there you had the hybrid. You had the half-human, half-wolf. What do we see mostly here? Obviously, if someone looks like a wolf, you would know if they were human.
Yeah, and the majority of the stories we're looking at least in Texas, you know, I've done research into the dogman phenomena outside of the state, but, you know, where I specialize is in Texas. And here, the primary description that we're seeing are upright walking canine figures exceeding 6 feet in height, sometimes as tall as 11 or 12. We start talking to witnesses out near Sam Houston National Forest. They're apparently massive out there. Pointed ears, very often described as having glowing eyes, usually yellow, but we also see red from time to time. I've heard glowing white eyes. I've heard black. So the eyes are also a variety of colors. And they're usually described as being either very hairy or kind of lightly shaggy, sort of like what we see in some of the movie descriptions. And that's where, you know, the term werewolf, at least as I like to use it, comes from, is that's what these witnesses are using to describe what they're seeing. I saw a werewolf or something that looks like one. But then again, we do have a few stories that kind of fit more into that supernatural, maybe spiritual spectrum, where they are described as changing shape. Or one in particular, the werewolf of Gregton, you know, it's described as being much like you said, a half human, half wolf-like, kind of having features of both, but still on the whole looking very much like a canine. So the majority, again, are just appear to be wolves or dogs walking on two legs. But then we do have a few that are a little more strange, a little harder to nail down.
Now, in terms of shape-shifting, which is kind of what we're getting into here, have you looked at the history of such things, such phenomena, where people can change into other creatures, or other creatures can change into humans or something else?
Yeah, that is something that's come across my radar quite a bit. You know, when you're talking about the werewolf or dogman phenomena, it's inevitable. Some of these stories, we hear about them starting off on four legs, looking very much like a normal dog or some kind of a wolf, and then standing up, sort of changing shape, and, you know, then they're on 2 feet. If we look at the history of shapeshifters, that's another thing that, again, is so deeply tied into our folklore and our history, going back as far as we can possibly go. If we're talking about the Central Texas area, you know, Mesoamerican folklore was deeply ingrained here and still is, you know, for thousands and thousands of years. One example, the Aztecs and the Mayans talked about was the Nagual, or the Jaguar Men, and these were priests or acolytes, sometimes described as warriors, sometimes described as, like, you know, the priests of Quetzalcoatl, the great feathered serpent, and they could change into a variety of forms, you know, birds, rats, dogs or wolves, jaguars. So that's one example, you know, very closely adjacent to the Central Texas area that's been around, as far as we're concerned, forever. And that's part of what's so compelling about this, is it's not just a string of recent sightings and a couple of folk tales. It's something that we can find traces of just about everywhere.
Long and short, before we go into case histories and other things, do you think there's a factual basis to any of this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm of the opinion, and this is just kind of a philosophy I apply to most areas of paranormal inquiry, that once we've had enough reports, once we've had enough consistencies from independent witnesses who do not know each other, in this case, you know, the dogman phenomenon is not super widely known if you compare it to UFOs or Bigfoot. So these are people who had never heard of dogman before they started telling their stories. If you look at enough of those cases, it makes more sense that, to me, this is my opinion, it makes more sense that something inexplicable is going on, something that we haven't identified scientifically, than it is that 35 odd people, which is about the number of cases I looked at in the book, saw a weird dog and mistook it for something else. So in my opinion, yes. I don't know what they are, but I do think they exist.
Hey, we've got Aaron Deese and a topic on the agenda this week: shapeshifters, werewolves, dogmen, things like that. No howling, please. My co-host is Tim Swartz. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracow.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Attention, your money is now controlled by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000, 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Call 800-900-8000.
Both my legs were amputated due to an IED. It's when you start to try to get back into, like, an everyday life. I absolutely felt like I lost some of my purpose. There must be something more. When DAV came into my life, they gave me a new mission. I could still be a productive member of society, could still support a family.
The DAV gave him that sense of structure and purpose again to get his life back together.
Visit DAV.org to learn more about our mission.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
I will not comment on Tim Swartz and his attempt to do a werewolf howl. I thought one of the best ones was done by Warren Zevon. And the song Werewolves of London.
That is a classic, yes.
Oh, it is. And as I mentioned to you before we got started, I thought in putting the song together, he was kind of almost making it up as he went along.
I can see that, yeah. Yeah, it does have kind of an improvised spoken word vibe to it. Not spoken word so much, but yeah. And it works.
Because there was kind of inconsistencies in the lyrics. And I thought, that's part of it. I'll give you one example there, where he says, I saw Lon Chaney walking with the Queen, doing the Werewolves of London. And then he says, I saw Lon Chaney Jr. walking with the Queen. Now, to me, it sounds like he was basically just making up the lyrics as he went along, which is how it got that way. Because otherwise, as those of us who even care about horror movies, it was Lon Chaney Jr. who played the Wolfman. Now, the original Lon Chaney, his father, was an expert at putting elaborate makeup on to play grotesque characters or monsters. But his son, Creighton Toll Chaney, who became Lon Chaney Jr., basically had this elaborate makeup that made him, I would say, half man, half wolf, with the face and the teeth and the feet. I thought it was beautifully done. I don't think any werewolf character since then has done quite as well. What do you think?
Yeah, I mostly tend to agree with you. I'm a big fan of the werewolf in American Werewolf in London, just because, again, talking about eyewitness descriptions, that's actually pretty close to what we see with a lot of modern dogman encounters. But as far as classical depictions go, standard setting, you know, you really can't top Lon Chaney Jr. Yeah.
Well, also, he was a terrific actor and a very tortured role, because he basically tells you and makes you understand he didn't want to be a monster. But Bela Lugosi bit him. He was a werewolf. He was in there for like 3 seconds in the film. He bit him, turned him into a wolf when the moon was full and the autumn moon was bright and all that stuff. And he just kept playing that role even through the sequels, which were not always that good. In Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, he was there too. There, I don't think he was quite as sympathetic.
Yeah, a little more comical in that depiction, for sure.
I like the part where, at the end of the film, they're in a rowboat, Abbott and Costello. And they say something about, well, we don't have to worry about monsters anymore because Dracula and the Wolfman and the Frankenstein monster are gone. By the way, this was one of the rare appearances of Bela Lugosi as Dracula. Probably only the second one after the original. And he did beautifully. It's sad about his career. But anyway, then you just hear this laugh. And they can't see anyone. And he says, hi, I'm the Invisible Man. And that was the voice of Vincent Price. As comedy films go, I thought that was one of the best.
Yeah, it's a seminal classic for sure. It's essential viewing, really.
Anyway, let us continue here, talking about dogmen, wolfmen, shapeshifters. How did you go about to collect the cases for your book?
Yeah, so it was kind of a variety. I spent a lot of time trolling through historical archives like, you know, JSTOR, the portal to Texas history, for example, looking for references to wolves or werewolves in Texas. Because it wasn't just looking at, you know, sightings of upright canines. It was also looking at the history of the areas in which these things were being seen. You know, what's the cultural background? Who settled here? What kind of stories might they have brought with them? Were there wolves in this area previously? And the answer is almost always yes. We had wolves all over Texas. And then also, you know, a lot of online research, because that's where people are sharing their stories now. I'm not the biggest fan of Reddit just in general, but there were a few cases on there that I found, you know, pretty compelling. They did make their way into the book. And then Heather Mosier over at Small Town Monsters, during the production process for the documentary, actually tracks some of these people down, you know, whose stories we had just read online. So we were able to interview them, and they're actually in the documentary. And then also looking at just, you know, older books, older publications that were out there. One example I mentioned a little while ago is the Gregton werewolf. And the only place that was ever talked about was in an article in Fate magazine in March of 1960.
Couldn't find the text of the article anywhere online, so I did some digging, got a hold of a back issue, and, you know, lo and behold, there's the story. So it really was a variety of different sources, a lot of online research and then digging through books and historical archives, and then a lot of interviews, man. I haven't sat down and counted them all up, but I think I conducted about 35 interviews for this book on the whole, between witnesses, experts, and you know, consultants. So a lot of interviewing. That was probably the bulk of the actual research, was just talking to people.
Did you ever find an instance where you think somebody's just putting you on?
You know, every witness I've talked to, I believes what they are saying. There may be cases, you know, in the book or in my periphery that's not the case. But my day job, which I just left, you know, I was at for about 10 years, and it primarily consisted of talking to people. And you get a sense when you do that day in and day out of who believes what they're saying and who's just making up a story. And the people I spoke to believe what they're saying. Now, if you zoom the lens out and take in every story about dogmen that's out there, there's some pretty wild stuff that even as a believer in this phenomena, I don't subscribe to and I can't get behind. But I was fortunate in that I didn't run into anyone who did not strike me as credible. Yeah.
Do you think they're making it up in terms of believing something that wasn't there?
I don't, honestly. I think these people actually saw something physically in front of them. Now, there is conjecture that maybe these things, like we said earlier, are spectral or spiritual in nature. There's the idea of the tulpa or the thought form, you know, something that we see and that we project out into the world. So there is the idea that maybe some of these sightings, possibly all of these sightings, could be the result of that. But even if that's the case, whether it's something that they're imagining or something that's spiritually being projected into the world, you have to ask why all these people who have never met each other are seeing the same thing. You know, kind of the argument you can apply to some UFO cases. Why are all these people seeing triangles, for example, if they're just imagining it? Or why are all these people seeing Bigfoot if they're just imagining it? So, you know, in my mind, there may be some cases where people are imagining things or seeing things, but why are they all seeing the same thing? So.
Well, certainly the consistency is always an important argument in favor of something, particularly something weird in this particular case. We have Aaron Deese exploring dogmen and other strange creatures with Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Remember what you were doing 4 years ago at this very moment, and how much everything changed a year later. We don't live just anywhere. We live on a crowded island with daily news headlines that make our ancestors spin in their graves. And we all know that tougher days lie ahead. So the real question is, do you have a proper supply of emergency food on hand? If not, now's the time to get some, while things are still relatively calm. The company most Americans choose is My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com to get yourself a 1 week supply of emergency food. It comes in a nifty ammo can that's loaded with delicious meals you'll love. No skimping with these meals, as you'll get 2,000 calories per day. You'll like the special $30 savings available this week only on this 1 week supply of emergency food, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News Update. More than 80 million Americans are sweltering under heat alerts and advisories from Miami to Palm Springs, while one of the world's hottest spots, Death Valley, California, is flirting with 130 degrees this weekend. Police in Georgia were searching for a man they say is responsible for four shooting deaths in an Atlanta suburb on Saturday. Police identified the man as Andre Longmore, and a $10,000 reward is being offered. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is doing well after being rushed to a hospital with dehydration on Saturday. The Prime Minister's office says initial results came back normal, and he's undergoing additional routine tests. The Biden administration is forgiving $39 billion in student debt for over 800,000 borrowers. The Education Department says it will notify eligible borrowers in the coming days. Jerry Barmash, USA News.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, dogmen on the agenda. Aaron, in assembling these particular cases, did people contact you? How did you acquire the information?
Yeah, it's kind of a variety. So it started with the sighting I mentioned earlier, which just came up in casual conversation with a family member, combined with cross-referencing that sighting with the database on the North American Dogman Research Project. And then from there, people did start coming to me. I had fellow researchers like Jody Cook, again, North American Dogman Research Project, Jesse and Joe Doyle over at Hellbent Holler, who are deeply invested in this stuff, you know, and do this kind of research all the time. And when you spend time in this world, inevitably, you end up running into people who have seen things. So there were several cases where someone was sent my way by a fellow researcher, or someone who I, you know, already knew. And then there were cases where it just came up in conversation, or, you know, if you're researching this topic, you should talk to my mother-in-law. She saw this thing back in the 50s. That was a story I just got the other day, actually, that I found out about too late to get it into the book. So it really is kind of a variety. Again, there's people that come to you, there's people that are brought to you by others, and then there's stories that are already out there that just haven't really found a home yet. You know, maybe they're on Reddit somewhere, or maybe it's in the comment thread of a story about a different werewolf. So
I wonder how people regard that in general. I mean, on the PowerCast, we hear lots of unusual stories. We try to make sure we get ones with a factual basis and try to understand it. But in general, if someone says to a family member or friend, I saw something last night that looked like half wolf or half dog and half man, you'd think they'd get laughed out of the room. How do people react to that?
Sadly, that's very often the case. You know, if we look at the history of any paranormal phenomena, witnesses are very often derided. You know, sometimes they even are laughed out of town. We have many, many examples of that. So some of the witnesses I've talked to have said, you know, I've really never shared this with anyone because I didn't think they were going to believe me. The individual I spoke with a few days ago, you know, she's in her 70s, and her daughter, who set up the meeting, said, you know, she's never told this story to anyone outside of our family because she was afraid of being ridiculed. So you run into that a lot, where especially with something as strange as this, because we've kind of reached a point where if you saw a UFO, that's not too out of scope. Like, even the government's talking about that. Okay, you saw a UFO. Maybe not so much with Bigfoot sightings, but that's a little easier for people to swallow. You know, you saw, oh, maybe you saw Bigfoot. Okay, several thousand other people have as well. That's great. With this, it's such a strange thing because it's so deeply ingrained in our pop culture. We've already talked about a few examples of books or movies or television programs where werewolves are just part of the narrative, kind of like zombies have become in the last few years. They're just everywhere. They're all over the place. When you're trying to explain to somebody that you, in front of you, physically, in reality, saw something that, as far as most people are concerned, only exists in pop culture, that's difficult. That's difficult to do whether you believe in the paranormal or not. That's exceedingly difficult.
Can you give us some details about that recent case that you just came across where somebody had an experience in the 50s?
Yeah, I can. I'm still in the process of speaking with her, but I can kind of give you a breakdown. It took place in central San Antonio back in the 50s. The streets were labeled differently back then. The block numbers were different. So one of the things I'm still trying to figure out is where exactly this took place. But she saw it sitting on a roof adjacent to the home she lived in at the time. And she said it appeared to be feeding on something. And the way she described it physically is point for point what we see with so many of these other modern encounters. The glowing eyes, the pointed ears, the upright posture, long claws, thick fur. And again, that's central San Antonio. Now, back in the 50s, the city wasn't nearly as developed. The part of town where she was living would have been, you know, a few houses, maybe some main boulevards, but all the highways and all the sky rises and stuff, none of that was around at that time. So if you look at the area, it was also typical of where we see these sightings, you know, places where there's a creek present, where there's a lot of woods, where there's people living, but maybe not a huge, huge population center yet. So very interesting. And again, I'm still working on that one. I'm still communicating with her and doing empirical research to try to nail down details. But yeah, these stories are still coming out.
Have you personally ever seen anything weird?
I have not. Well, I've seen some strange lights in the sky. I have been to some places that I am convinced are haunted. I've had some odd encounters where, again, you're in a weird place and a weird thing happens, and you're like, how could that possibly be a coincidence? I've never seen Sasquatch. I've never seen Dogman. Never been abducted. I've never had, you know, one of those primary hallmark, write about it, paranormal experiences. And at this point, if I did, I don't know if I would tell anyone because I don't know if they would believe me. You know, oh, of course the Dogman guy saw a werewolf. But no, I'm more of a spectator and an enthusiast than an experiencer. Yeah.
So the encounter you just told about, the woman in the 50s, you said that it looked to her that it was something on a roof feeding on something. Now, tell us about the first experience that you discovered the whole phenomenon of Dogman, that you said, I think it was a friend of the family or a relative?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of those cases where this is one of those cases where witness credibility really comes into play, because I've known this guy for years, going on 20 years now. He's real estate professional in two different states, military veteran, you know, business owner, father of two very well-adjusted, intelligent, smart kids, you know, not a guy who's going out with a tinfoil hat and a pair of binoculars looking for werewolves. Like, just not, you know, when you think about the pop culture cliche of someone who experiences or believes in the paranormal, this guy is not what comes to mind, you know. So hearing him tell me this story with a straight face, I mean, just dead eye contact. Yeah, I saw this thing that looked like a wolf on two legs. It blew my mind. But the way he describes it is he was driving from Colorado to Austin, actually to visit us, to visit my wife and I, because we lived in North Austin at the time. And they were traveling past Lampasas. And around Lampasas, like many parts of Texas, you have a lot of wooded areas, you have a lot of creeks and rivers and things like that. And as they're coming around this bend, it's very late at night, his headlights catch this form of a wolf-like thing on two legs, crouched over the side of the road, and actually in a beat really similar to the story of the one on the roof, you know, it's holding something in its front paws or in its hands, and it appears to be feeding on it. And he got a good enough look at it that he could see blood on the nuzzle, he could see, you know, the claws were long, they were sharp. He said the eyes glowed black, or he described them as death black eyes. And the physical description is very similar to what we see with a lot of these others, the pointed ears, you know, the kind of muscular frame. And again, hearing this story from somebody I've known for so long, I'm just like, okay, well, he saw something. He definitely saw something. Yeah.
It wouldn't be a case, and I don't want to be insulting, to someone I don't know, of a friend knowing of your interest but wanting to get in on the action.
No, definitely not. And I'm glad you asked that question. That's a very, very important question, because as a side note, now that the book is out, now that the documentary is out, any story I do get, I have to filter through that screen of, okay, now that this person knows about this, you know, what's the chance of someone wanting to get on the bandwagon? But in this case, I hadn't written the book yet. I hadn't talked about writing a book yet. We hadn't even produced a podcast on it. We were just having a casual conversation. And I said, you know, I just saw this, I just watched this documentary on the Beast of Bray Road. Have you ever heard of that? He's like, no, what's that? And the Beast of Bray Road, for anybody who's not familiar, was, you know, the wolfman-like creature in Wisconsin that was very well documented by Linda Godfrey. And I showed him an artist depiction of it, and he goes, you know, I saw something kind of like that once. And that leads us into the actual story. So if this person was deciding to jump on a bandwagon, it was a very, very small bandwagon. And I was the only one in the room who was on it at the time. And that's kind of how it went, speaking with other witnesses as well. You know, my first contact with a lot of these people was, hey, my name is Aaron Deese. I'm writing a book about this. I understand you had a sighting. Would you be interested in talking to me? And so these people didn't know, you know, that this was something that was going to be getting a little more mainstream attention. So it's a great question, though.
Have you ever read the books by the late Linda Godfrey on Dogman and such?
Yes. Yeah. Linda is a legend. She can never be replaced. You and I would not be having this conversation right now without, you know, her contributions to the field.
By the way, she's been on the Paracast a few times. And
okay.
We're sad to lose her. She was a really nice woman. Aaron Deese joining us. I'm Gene. He's Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
If you love mysteries, you'll love these two books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll learn about the strange beings that can look like us, but are not. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll see the hard evidence of UFOs that has been ignored or even hidden. These books will definitely blow your mind, and both are now available on Amazon.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
I need to do my taxes. Are there any self-help options online?
Doing taxes yourself? IRS.gov has many self-service tax tools, and they're all just a click away. Prepare and file your taxes online using FreeFile. Use our calculator to estimate your tax withholding. Order a tax transcript. Apply for an employer identification number. Check your refund status, too. IRS.gov, your 24/7 federal tax resource.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Oh, I hate to say it this way. We're having a howling good time on the Paracast, and I'm hearing everybody say, ouch. He doesn't want to do puns. He's doing his puns again.
It's a show we can really sink our teeth into.
Let's not get outside ourselves here, because that particular remark bites.
If you make enough puns, people might start asking, who let the dogs out? I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Ah, wolf. What is the craziest dogman story you ever heard?
So the absolute wildest one, and I actually had a moment where I had to sit and decide, okay, am I going to put this in the book? There's a gentleman, and I've spoken about this before because it just blows my mind every time I talk about it. There's a gentleman in the Dallas-Fort Worth area named John, and he was one of the witnesses who was put in touch with me by Jesse and Joe Doyle over at Hellbent Holler. And he has been encountering these things on his property since fall of 2021. So when I talked to him, it was early summer of 2022, so he was still experiencing activity at that time. And he's counted no fewer than five of these things on his property. He's taken shots at them. In one story, the one I really had to sit down and go, okay, no one's going to believe this, but it's going in the book anyway. He put seven rounds into one with 5.56 ammunition. I'm not a gun guy. I don't know a whole lot about guns, but I understand those are very, very efficient rounds, and they are deadly at 200 yards. He put seven rounds into one of these things at point blank, and it got up and kept running. I've told that story in interviews before, and I've actually had people say there's no way that's real. And I just shrug and go, well, that's what he relayed to me. That's what he says he experienced. And, you know, as a writer, it's not my job to decide who's credible, even if there is a moment where I have to stop and go, nobody's going to believe this. You know, people are going to think I'm making this up. But that's probably the craziest one is, you know, someone who sees these things regularly has taken shots at them and still hasn't managed to put them down. It's pretty wild.
Every time I hear people talk about guns, and I know you're in Texas, which is, what, gun central in the United States?
When you're born in Texas and you leave the hospital, they give you a gun as a part of your sent home kit. No, I'm joking. We do have a lot of guns out here. Yeah, that's very standard.
No, I'll tell you, I was born in Brooklyn, New York, as our listeners know. Not a lot of people have guns in New York. I mean, mostly you think police officers have guns. Military, they have guns. I have been around real guns. I've also heard fake guns go off when they would do stage shows and such, and someone had to shoot somebody or just show it off. I have never physically touched a real gun. I mean, as a kid, I had cap guns and all this toy stuff. And I remember my late uncle bought me a holster in Mexico. And he said, this is a great holster for your cap guns. But the thing lasted about 2 days. Not very well built. But seriously speaking, never in my life have I touched a gun.
Yeah, it's a normal way of life for a lot of folks here in Texas. And that's another thing with these stories that's so compelling to me is a lot of these witnesses, the great majority of them, report being unsettled, afraid, you know, not sleeping well, being scared to go out in the woods after they have an encounter with one of these creatures. And these are people who, as we joked a moment ago, are practically born with guns in their hands. These are Texas Hill Country people. They know what wildlife lives out here. They're used to being around it, and they don't scare easy. So when one of those people says, you know, I saw this thing and this is what it looked like and it scared the heck out of me, I don't know. That makes me stop and think. Yeah.
Yeah, because you think in a situation like that, they pull out the gun. But I tend to think here, in general, that a gun owner, unless they've had military or law enforcement training, if they're put into a situation where they need that gun, it's going to be like trying to find your camera when a UFO is overhead. They're not going to do it. They're either going to be startled, afraid to do it. They're not going to actually take the gun out and try to defend themselves.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I have a background in martial arts and self-defense. I taught classes for a number of years, and, you know, students would ask us, like, oh, what's the best thing I can carry for self-defense? Should I keep a pocket knife on me? And we're like, well, no, because you have to find the knife. You have to get it out. You have to open it up. You have to lock the safety. You know, there's too many steps involved. So a lot of times when we do hear stories about someone taking a shot at one of these, because, you know, gentleman in Dallas is not the only one. It is someone with a military or a law enforcement background who's comfortable handling firearms, you know, who knows their way around one. Yeah.
That's what I can understand. I think you keep the gun in the safe because you don't want your children to get a hold of it. And there's the robber in your home and he's pointing a gun at you. What do you do? And the question is, you can't do anything because the gun's in the safe or somewhere for safekeeping. Unless you sleep with it under your pillow, like they do in some of the movies. Anyway, we don't want to get
in
guns.
In Texas.
What'd you say?
Sorry. I said in Texas. Yeah.
Let me ask you here. Did you restrict your dog man search just to Texas, or have you done any searches in other states?
For this project, yes, I was focused exclusively on Texas, you know, because, of course, that is the name of the book. But there is research outside of the state that played into it. One of the cases I talk about is the case of the Hexham Heads, which is another more in the spectral realm. You know, these two little boys in England find a couple of stone heads that conjure a werewolf. Fascinating story if you haven't heard it. So, and then some of the cases in Texas I looked at actually do have correlation to some kind of a stone carving or a stone figure being associated with the appearance of this being. So inevitably, you end up talking about cases like that that do take place outside of the state. Right now, my research is focused still on the Texas things. Like I said, I'm still getting reports and still having a lot of great conversations like this one with you guys. But I'm expanding it, looking at this phenomena in other areas, partially to draw correlation and see, okay, what consistencies do we have in the Texas Triangle that tie to other dogman phenomena? And also just because I'm, at this point, I'm hooked. I'm fascinated with this stuff. So, yeah.
Dogman Triangle. It's almost like Bermuda Triangle. You go into a place and all bets are off. Now, can you specify specifically the region we're talking about here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be the first to admit that when I came up with the term the Dogman Triangle, I was looking for a catchy title for our podcast. my wife and I have been producing the Hey Strangeness podcast for about 2 years, and I was really, this was back in the beginning, so I was like, I got to come up with a good title. I got to have something that sounds good. And it just so happened that the three sightings we were initially looking at formed a triangle on the map of about 700 square miles. But then as I continued and kept looking into this stuff, we see this concentration of sightings in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And then we see another deep concentration in the San Antonio area. And then going east, we see another deep concentration kind of centered around Houston. So in working with Seth and Heather and the rest of the Small Town Monsters team, you know, we kind of looked at this as a whole and said, well, this triangle is not limited to just the Austin, Johnston City, Fredericksburg area, which is what we were looking at initially. And if you're not familiar with Texas, it's a very big place. That's kind of situated between Austin and San Antonio. So the Dogman Triangle as it exists today is Dallas-Fort Worth, San Antonio, Houston. And I think that helps for folks, again, who may not be familiar with Texas, because I think in general we kind of know where those cities are. Like, we're familiar with them. We've heard of them. They're big cities. So I think it helps to frame where this phenomenon is taking place and where people are seeing these things. But it's not limited to those areas. We have stuff more in the central area, in Meridian, which is in Bosque County, I believe. We've got the Gregton werewolf, which is getting closer to Louisiana. You know, we have, as recently as last year, the Amarillo Dogman, which is that weird picture that was captured on the stationary cameras at a zoo. Fun case if you haven't read into it. We do have activity in other parts of the state, but at least based on what we know right now, it seems to be focused in this triangular pattern, kind of dead center between these three major cities.
Now, as far as visiting Texas, I've been to Dallas-Fort Worth. I have a niece who lives in Houston, but I haven't talked to her in a number of years, unfortunately, and maybe I can ask her if she's heard of anything. I don't think anybody in my family, you know, my immediate family, my brother's kids, my parents no longer with us, had any interest in any of these subjects. They might, but they never asked me about it, although they know what I'm doing. So that's kind of weird. Nobody in my immediate family chases the paranormal. Some might say they are paranormal creatures, like I think my late brother might have been a paranormal creature, but that's something that would make no sense to anybody, probably not to me. Aaron, Gene, Tim, you're in.
Yo, the Paracast!
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners, I want you to have the entire Paracast experience, so I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices. Our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.